That right there is a perfect example, right? Planning, adapting to change. That's what we do. Let me get my presentation up. So if I point. So for those of you who don't know me yet, I'm Lanya Ross. I work with the Metropolitan Council. And I have been there for 12 years now this month. I'm going to get energetic, so hopefully this won't mess up the sound if I move around. So one of the challenges that we have with regional groundwater planning, and I think this applies to the region and at the local level, is that technology is always changing. And your toolbox is something that you kind of start to use to build in habits, and we build in our assumptions, and it starts to help simplify how we approach things. And even sometimes when our conceptual models change, our tools do, and it's kind of a way we have to reinforce ourselves to re-examine some of those assumptions. And sometimes things you've forgotten about come back to bite you or inspire you. That's what happens to me in PowerPoint. So I was really excited to be invited to speak at this conference. Thank you for this particular topic, Ellen. I'm really excited to talk. I'm going to focus on my personal perspective working at the Metropolitan Council. And I'm going to try to not be too long-winded, so I'm going to stick to a script. My goal is that this presentation is a success, but I have already given myself permission to fail because I think you learn more that way, and it gives me the courage to try new things. So I trust that you will get as much out of this if I fail as you will if I succeed the way I would like to. I hope some people are kind of nodding, like, yeah, that seems reasonable. But before I begin, I've told you a little bit about where I come from, but I want to share some of my foundational assumptions that I make to all of my planning work. My background is a geologist, but I have always been interested in source water protection, community development, how the landscape shapes how we live. And I have been interested in this my entire career, so I talk to a lot of people. So assumption number one, we all know what we're planning for. We are all on the same page. High level when it comes to groundwater sustainability. Years ago, I asked my preschool son, because I just wanted to spontaneously test a five-year-old, what do you do for water? And he said, well, don't make it yucky and leave some for the fish. I'm like, yeah, that seems about right. And if you look at the Clean Water Council's new goals for the Clean Water Fund that were just released, I was impressed that they're pretty much in line. I think that we can all agree that that high level is kind of what we're aiming for. So as we work on all this stuff, it is hard, it is complicated, but I think we all have a shared vision for the most part. That being said, I go into everything that I do every single day knowing that answering the question, what should I do for groundwater sustainability? That question is freaking hard. We are, and I really love working with all of you, but I think you'd agree, we step on each other's toes a lot. There is mismatched data. We're not sure if somebody's right and somebody's wrong, or if we're just missing something. This is complicated. What should I do in my role at council versus what should I do personally? And sometimes they conflict and sometimes they don't. What's up with that? This is hard. And that tension is there every day. And there's no solution. If we go into this thinking that there is some solution, that would be a failure. Because when we talk about water, we're talking about change, right? And we're talking about a global, like a planet scale water cycle. So that's my long-winded introduction, but I just kind of wanted you to know that's what I'm bringing to this. That's where I'm coming from. So take a moment, think about change. We're all scientists in the room, but think about it on a personal level. Some change you've experienced recently, a new class, or some of you may have started a new job or gotten married. Maybe you've broken up. On your way here or to work, there was an unexpected detour due to road construction. As you're thinking about that, what do you feel? Happy? Frustrated? I mean, there's feelings when we encounter change. And I also want you to think about how you feel about something. And you feel better about it when you've planned for that change or when it's a surprise? This is all about the feels today. Why do we plan? I'd say because it makes us feel better. But I haven't yet found a more concise or a more compelling explanation for planning than Lincoln's If we could first know where we are and where we're going, we could better judge what to do and how to do it. To me, planning is an expression of thoughtfulness, it's intentionality, and it's commitment. And I think that this quote really drives home the point that planning is very powerful, even though I know we think about it in terms of reports and red tape and procedure and this very boring thing. But what it is can be a very powerful thing. So where are we? Due to a combination of great planning and really good luck, the Twin Cities, 7-county metropolitan area, sits in a spot with 3 major rivers running through it and a pile of aquifers, and we have award-winning wastewater treatment to clean up all that water that we use. As a region, we use about, and this is private and public, not including the non-consumptive power use, about 500 million gallons a day, roughly. How much do we have? 7-county metropolitan area, on average. So we use about 500 for everything. In the 2015 Master Water Supply Plan, we did some analyses that estimate sustainably how much do we think we have from the sources. So we have groundwater. We have surface water. We have wastewater that we could be using in new ways. And we have stormwater. So if you look at a nice average regional picture, why am I here? We are doing fine. This is not the desert Southwest. Because of course, right, each source has different limitations, different costs to treat it, different availability, right? Not all the aquifers are in the right spots. Many communities in our metro area are nowhere near one of those rivers. Another complicating factor, of course, is that this is a nice average snapshot. This is a 2003 to 2012 average, right? That changes from day to day, from year to year. So this nice simple picture is a little more complicated. And the water demand varies across the region, right? Some communities use a lot more water than others. So this picture, this nice simple regional picture, gets complicated pretty quickly. And therefore, the planning kicks in. So I want to dive down into that last point a little bit more deeply to kind of illustrate how the complexity of water planning feels to me. And I'm going to use cats. Because to me, putting cats in water kind of illustrates the tension in water supply planning, especially when you're dealing with there's over 100 water suppliers here in the Twin Cities metro area, 186 communities. So this is, I want to stress, this is real data. This is data I and my team use every single day. So, you know, that's a little more complicated. What is that really? This is the graph that illustrates the path that those cats were taking. Each color represents a different group of communities in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. So some of these communities are agricultural, some communities are urban, urban center, Minneapolis and St. Paul, growing suburban communities. So we have different kinds of communities. The lines are illustrating the annual change in summer versus winter water use. So the higher the values mean that there's a lot more water in the summer in those communities than there is in the winter. Communities that have a more close to one means that the winter and the summer water use is pretty much the same. So that might be some communities who have a lot of turf irrigation in the summer, or there are some communities that have industries that just tend to use a lot of water in the summer. So there's different drivers for that. One of the things that I think is really interesting is from 1990, when this starts, all of these different communities were closer together. Our communities were more similar in their water use, and they use water more evenly throughout the year here in the metro. Whereas, more recently, not only have our communities gotten a lot different, we have a lot of different kinds of communities now, but some of those communities are using a lot more water in the summer than they used to. So planning for regional groundwater supply, a lot of these are groundwater suppliers, so that's the tie, means not only planning for all of this different water use, but planning for the differences in communities' water use and how those differences change over time. Complicated quickly, which is where the Metropolitan Council comes in. Bringing these different kinds of changing pieces of information together into regional picture is what we do. It's too big for any one community, right? They have enough to do just focusing on what's going on in their community and supplying water to their people. So we have a role to play here. We're the regional planning agency for the 7-county metropolitan area. And so for the past 50 years, our agency has been looking at the data that describes these different communities. As you can imagine, there's a lot of strong feelings about what we do and how we do it. And there had been for 50 years. And I think, in my experience, part of that is because, right, it's about change. And facing change is hard. It's uncertain. It raises questions about control. It affects what resources we have access to or don't have access to in our daily lives. So it's good that we're passionate about this. For the next slides, I want to share some information from the Met Council that is not water data, but it's what Met Council has available. And so if you don't know that we have this information, I want you to leave today knowing these are resources that you can use. And it's part of the story behind why we need the water that we need. For example, we have information about land use change. And land use does change. On average, over the last 16 years in the Twin Cities metro area, we have added about 5,000 acres of developed land every year. That rate has been going down over time. As you can see, this is the blue graph. But there's substantial change in our landscape. It's not all about development, putting in new houses, putting in new commercial, right? We're also changing our green space. Over the past 30 years, we've added about 2,800 acres of green space in the metropolitan area every year. And again, you can see that that rate changes over time. But our landscape is really shifting all the time. And that land use changes reflects, for example, our growing population. So this is showing the population in 1990 on the top, the women and the men, women in purple, men in blue. And at the time, the biggest population block were people in their 20s and 30s, starting their careers, starting their families, right? That was where the population was. Recently, our population has grown, and it's changed. We now have a lot more people who are moving into the ends of their careers, moving into retirement, having grandkids, and we have a lot more of those grandkids. So our entire demographic is shifting and changing over time. And there are implications for water use. I will assure you that my teenage cousins use water differently than my 9-year-old son. We're also more educated. In 1990, 12% of our population in the metropolitan area did not have a high school diploma. Today, the number of people without a high school diploma has been cut in half. We're more diverse. 1990, we were 90% white. Now, it's about 75% white. We have a change in our population across the metro. And related to that changing demographics, we're seeing changes in our economy. In 2000, for example, the healthcare field was about 10% of our employment, and that has gone up in 2017 to 15%. Maybe driven by some of the changes in our aging population, for example. So these are the kinds of changes and the kinds of information that we are experiencing in our region and that our communities are experiencing and having to plan for and adjust for and provide services to. So all of that is driving the groundwater planning challenge. That was change in the past. So we also are charged with looking ahead, right? What are our goals? How do we maintain sustainability? Climate change comes to mind, and we're going to hear more about that after my presentation. We also expect population to continue to grow, driving increased water use. Based on our estimates, if we continue to use water at the rates that we're using it today, by 2040, we're going to need about 100 million gallons more per day for our municipal supply, not including any changes in our private industry and other private use. So what do we do with that? This is where it really gets interesting. We talk about success and near miss and failure. Looking at how we're going to be using water in the future was one of the focuses of the Metropolitan Council's water supply planning work. I want to just show you an example of how we've tackled groundwater planning and water supply planning. In 2010, Met Council adopted the first region-wide master water supply plan. Master water supply plan is a statutory term. I wouldn't necessarily call any of my reports that if I chose, but if you hear that, this is the report it's referring to. It was supported by a regional groundwater model, Metro Model 2, and many of you here in the room contributed to that, and I thank you for that. We also brought in perspectives from communities across the metropolitan area. There were some interesting, challenging, detailed conversations. That plan went out to the public. That was in 2010. Over the next 5 years, at the council, we ran some different what-if scenarios. What if we used different sources? What if we really aggressively conserved water? So we were doing some different scenarios. There was a lot of new data being collected, right? We had the Clean Water Fund, so a lot of great research was being done. We incorporated that into some new projects, and we updated all of our regional policy plans, parks, transportation, housing, water resources. A lot of change in those 5 years. And so we updated our master water supply plan, and we updated the regional model, so now Metro Model 3. And all of this was happening in the context of 186 communities thinking about their planning and that they were going to have to update their plans. I haven't seen Jim Westerman in the audience. He is in the city of Woodbury. But I think he said it best. He really expressed the local concern for this the best. I was at a public meeting. At the time, he didn't know that I was the one working on a lot of this information. I was just sitting in the back, and I heard him say, I'm from Woodbury, and we're in the red blob of doom. Referring to the map on the lower left, you can see the red blobs. Doom is not a word that you really associate with success if you're doing water supply planning. And Jim was not alone. Water utilities have a very different focus, right, than regional planners and then state regulators. And they need a voice at the regional planning table. And so in 2014, Met Council received a letter from the City Engineers Association in Minnesota highlighting some of their local concerns with the direction that we were taking, with the data, with some of our assumptions, how they saw our approaches to modeling. Did Jim and CEAM's responses mean that Met Council had failed, that it was a near miss, that we succeeded? I'm going to say yes. I'll tell you what it felt like. It felt like a failure in that moment, and it was hard. But what did we do? There's a picture of Annika over here. I had to put her on the spot. I knew she'd be here. We got support from our leadership to, instead of hunkering down and getting defensive and pushing through a plan, to reach out, have more time to talk to people. So we held a series of workshops. Our staff met one-on-one with many, many meetings, just talking with different public utilities and communities and people interested in the modeling. And we, at the request of local stakeholders, supported a community technical work group of local utility staff who dug into the details of our water supply planning and modeling work. And some of these conversations were tense. But after sitting together and working together and not always agreeing, we ended up with a regional data, regional modeling, and a regional plan that did better incorporate those local perspectives. A key change, for example, was the inclusion of multiple scenarios of water demand, right? Not just, we think water demand in 2040 is going to be this, but it could be less, it could be more. So let's acknowledge that, and let's communicate about that, and let's incorporate that into our planning. Groundwater modeling still projects groundwater declines across the metropolitan area, given that projected growth, and if we're using these aquifers. But we all have a better understanding about why that is and what information informed that conclusion. And it supported a plan that was supported. I'm sorry, shouldn't use support twice, but that process ended up with a plan that was supported. It was endorsed by the Community Technical Work Group. It was approved by our Metropolitan Area Water Supply Advisory Committee, and it was formally adopted by the Metropolitan Council. And so that is the framework that I've been working with ever since. I like this fire metaphor. I'm kind of dramatic today. The engaging people in a new idea, right? Most people don't look at water supply at a regional scale, right? State agencies look at it at the state scale or in their watersheds, right? Cities look at it at the local scale. So we have this kind of unique perspective. So the information we put out is information that most people haven't seen before, right? There's some new ideas, new questions. So when I think of spark, right? A spark is not a happy, calm, comfortable situation, right? Watch a match get lit. There is friction. There is some explosive kind of fuel. There is pressure. And if you are not expecting that, it is startling and maybe a little bit terrifying. But if you know to expect that, it's okay. So how do we, and this is something I have learned, right? How do I do a better job when I'm doing this work, knowing that if we're going to be putting out some new ideas, creating the space for what might happen in there. Now, Getting something started is a completely different environment than keeping something going, right? Then I think about the candle. You need a more sheltered environment. You need to make sure that there is fuel. It needs tending, right? And so we also need to make sure that we're supporting that part of the process. And so these are the things that I've been learning with my geology degree over the past 12 years working at the Met Council. So were we successful with groundwater planning? Yes. We successfully created a plan, and we successfully got support for that plan. Are we successful being sustainable with our groundwater? I don't think any of us can answer that, right? It's what we do every single day. It's, are we making decisions every single day that lead us in that direction? And are we talking to each other and working to each other to figure out how are we informing ourselves so that we're making the best decisions? I can't answer that. But I do think that we have to continue being willing to experiment and experiment together. My coworker Brian Davis gave me this quote, and it's on my signature line in my email because I want to look at it every single day. That reminder, right? If you're doing an experiment, it's not success and failure, right? There's two possible outcomes. If your result confirms the hypothesis, if you're right, you've made a measurement. If it's contrary to the hypothesis, if you're wrong, if you fail, you've made a discovery, right? You're learning something that you can take forward. So I try to keep that together. And I think that this is something that I keep in mind too when we're in groundwater modeling meetings. Can you review my model? And it gets into, are you right? Are you wrong? Is this good? Is this bad? Let's stick more to, are we learning and delve into that and thinking about it more as an experiment. Because we have a lot more what if questions coming at us, right? I think we're all getting hit with this. And people kind of ultimately want to get to the, what exactly should I do here? But first we have to start out with what if and create the space to explore that. And I think all of us in the room are really in that space. What if road salt applications continue to rise? How do groundwater and surface water interact? Do we have the data to know how they interact? This is just some of the technical work that we've worked on in the past 12 years. Where is groundwater likely to get saltier? How fast? What are the implications for resource management? I mean, these are big questions. What if stormwater is infiltrated in different parts of the metropolitan area? What if wastewater is reclaimed in locations that are really far away from potential receiving waters? We have to infiltrate. What are the implications for wastewater management, stormwater management? What if there's more support for communities actually collaborating on source water protection? This is near and dear to my heart. I love wellhead protection. This is a map of all the parts of the source water areas and the drinking water supply management areas in the Seven County metropolitan area that fall outside the jurisdiction of the water supplier that they provide. So water suppliers are required to provide safe water and protect that water for their population. They're required to delineate where that water comes from, but they have no jurisdiction over it. What if we did things differently? So questions like these and others are going to play out over the coming years. And this is what I know we're all going to be working on. And again, I know that we're going to be successful. I'm just doggedly optimistic, and I know how stubborn a lot of you are, like I am. But I know it's going to be hard, and I know that most of it is going to feel like failure. But as we start to move forward, if we really kind of keep our intentions, we have a shared plan. If we keep that in mind and make our choices in line with that, I do think we're going to be successful. But I know we'll be more successful if we're working together on it, because one of the things I learned in this planning process is that a diverse team really got me a lot further than I was going to get there alone. And over those 12 years, my team has changed. And as the people I've worked with, even just in my work unit, have changed, I will tell you, I get a lot more irritated because we butt heads. But I learn a whole heck of a lot more than I do otherwise. And I have access to more resources because their relationships are then something that I can draw on. And so that's my declaration of success. We win. Any questions? Sorry, I was going to start it on a real positive note for you. You need more coffee. And you can be critical of the Met Council. Bring it on. I can take it.
Bob Cameron from Sudan, Minnesota. We're focused on groundwater here, but when you read the news, you hear about the metro area having to make choices between using groundwater and Mississippi River water. And I'm kind of curious, are we going to bump up against the limit of using Mississippi River water, or is that limitless?
That is a great question. The discussion about the balance of surface water and groundwater in the metropolitan area is in the news. We hear about it. And a very logical question is, will we bump up against the limits of the river? The sort of estimate of surface water that I showed up on that slide was the flow in the Mississippi, the St. Croix, and the Minnesota River 90% of the time. We as a metro area have a remarkable resource in our rivers. We do have to be concerned about drought, and the greater uncertainty that we have about drought, given some of the climate change that we're expecting, I think is something we have to keep in mind, right? We don't want to over-rely on the rivers. So as we think about how much we should rely on the rivers, I think we have to also be thinking about what are the backup supplies that we have in place should those rivers fail for contamination or for drought reasons. So thinking first about what's the capacity of a potential backup source for critical needs being step one, to then say how much should we then rely on the rivers. Does that kind of make sense? We have to kind of stepwise think about that. So it is not limitless. I really do not believe it's limitless. And I believe that sustainably our use of the rivers may have to consider what's the sustainable use of groundwater sources as a backup supply. So there may be a little bit of a feedback loop there as we have that conversation. But that detailed conversation, we haven't had a really big detailed conversation about that in a while. It gets talked about as Minneapolis looks for backup supply and as St. Paul thinks about backup supply somewhat. But I'd love to have more conversations about that exact question. Was that at all helpful? There's a lot of economics in this too, right? It's a lot more expensive to treat surface water than it is to treat groundwater. And so the economics of that challenge play into this as well.
Thank you, Lanya.